Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hex Grid. Hi, I'm Hex. Today's episode of the Hex Grid is going to be kind of fancy. It's basically a collection of songs that I think have been pretty fundamental but overlooked themselves when it comes to the history and the foundation of nerd music as a whole, be it comedy, geek rock, nerdcore hip-hop, or video game inspired music. What you just listened to is actually one of the, that's actually the latest contribution of today's selections. That's Missing You by Trash 80. It's from his 2008 release, Icarus. And I know when it comes to the foundation of what nerd music should sound like, 2008 is a late contributor, but when it comes to contemporary chiptunes, specifically for what can be done, making it dancey, that entire album is kind of celebrated by the scene, but kind of overlooked by other individuals. And specifically that track has been covered and remixed so many times, and usually done in a way of celebrating that song rather than looking for just another dancey tune. So I just wanted to share Missing You by Trash 80 with you. So I have a whole collection of fun songs for you today. I'm going to be, some of them are really old, some are not so old. You may have heard of some of these, but I am going to be avoiding the obvious tracks such as Godzilla by Blue Oyster Cult or anything from Led Zeppelin that references Lord of the Rings. If you didn't know about those, awesome. You can go check those out independently. That's some homework for you. There's actually going to be no hip hop in this episode. If something is nerdy rap, people know about it. I mean, yeah, I could play the Humpty Dance, but if you don't know about the Humpty Dance, then, I mean, well, there will be a link in this vid and in this podcast. So go to the page and check out the Humpty Dance. But mainly, I'm going to be focusing on songs that helped establish what could be and what, yeah, I guess is the best way to do it. It's music that what could be and how it shaped nerd music. And Trash 80 is kind of a forerunner, even though in 2008, of what could be done with chiptunes and making it dancey. So I'm going to have a few more examples for you. First up, we have from Thomas Dolby, who a lot of you may know from She Blended Me with Science. In 1981, he made the album The Golden Age of Wireless, which is pretty much, many agree, is the album to have if you were an 80s, like if you celebrated 80s music. And so hopefully this is something you'll definitely enjoy, and you'll see how this influence, like you'll see, especially in electronic and pop music nowadays in the nerdy scene, how Thomas Dolby really influenced this track that I'm going to be playing as One of Our Submarines. And following that is actually going to be from 1960. I'm going to be doing a little more comedy. This is Tom Lehrer. Now, Tom Lehrer was a mathematics professor at Harvard, as well as a comedy musician, kind of showing you where his intellect really lay when it came to making music. And so a lot of the humor is very clever and very smart. And that's what I look for in comedy music myself. I'm looking for something not easy, but something clever, something that puts some thought into it. This particular track has such an amazing punchline and phenomenally done. It's not one of his more popular tracks like The Elements Song or Poisoning Pigeons in the Park or The Masochism Tango, but I'm pretty sure you are really going to enjoy I Hold Your Hand in Mine. And then after that, when we get back, we'll have another track to listen to. So here we go. Enjoy.
Thank you. one more love song. I generally like to include at least one or two love songs in the evening's program, partly perhaps to convince people that even at the Harvard University Graduate School, that hotbed of celibacy that I used to call home, we did have our moments. This one is a tender ballad entitled simply, I Hold Your Hand in Mine. I hold your hand in mine, dear. I press it to my lips. I take a healthy bite from your dainty fingertips. My joy would be complete, dear, if you were only here. But still I keep your hand as a precious souvenir. The night you died, I cut it off. I really don't know why. For now, each time I kiss it, I get blood stains on my tie. I'm sorry now I killed you, for our love was something fine. Until they come to get me, I shall hold your hand in mine. You know, of all the songs I've ever sung, that is the one I've had the most requests not to.
Thank you.
What you just listened to was The Spirit of Radio by Rush. That came out in 1980, and Rush is kind of celebrated by the nerd crowd for a lot of reasons. And for me, I think it really boils down to their storytelling. Like with Rush, there is so much going on and it's so detailed. And it's something that really you still see nowadays in nerd music, be it telling a story through some nerdcore video game music, like the Proto Man or through Mega Ran. So it's definitely, I'd say that Rush is it fits in. Anyways, something I forgot to mention, I should have started off with this. We have a guest today. We have Jerry Buckner of Buckner and Garcia that we're going to interview, and I am really freaking excited about this. He is he's kind of a legend, and I'm really excited at the chance to get to talk with him. But before that, we got some more music. And because of how this episode is structured, I'm mainly just going to talk about the music that I'm playing for you. And I just want this to be more of an experience that you're going through, that you're listening to this music, you're being introduced to new songs. So the next song is, it's a kind of silly song. We have Fish Heads by Barnes & Barnes. If you grew up like me listening to Dr. Demento, you are very familiar with this song that first came out in 1979. But if you are not familiar with Fish Heads, oh boy, you are in for one hell of a treat. And it was labeled by Rolling Stone as one of the top 100 music videos of all time. And it is definitely unique. This is a song that just really experiments with what a song can be, and you still feel that. I still hear that today in a lot of bands that are still experimenting, but keeping it funny, keeping it nerdy. After that, we're going to be playing Pac-Man Fever because we got Jerry Buckner in the studios, and I am so freaking excited for this. So if you haven't listened to Buckner and Garcia before, hold on to your seats because you're going to have a really fun ride. If you have listened to Buckner and Garcia before, then you are also hold on to your seats and it's going to be awesome. So, and when we get back, we will hear another Buckner and Garcia song and then talk to the man himself. So, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, eat them up, yum. Fish heads, roly-poly.
Laughing happy fish heads in the evening, floating in the soup.
Fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, eat them up, yum.
Ask a fish head anything you want to, they won't answer, they can't talk.
They don't play drums.
Fish heads,
to me on a summer night. A stranger with nowhere to go. Miles from home, all alone, left behind in a world you didn't know. E.T., you came to me. No one would believe you were true.
Well, what you just listened to was E.T. I Love You by Buckner and Garcia. And as promised, it is my pleasure to introduce Jerry Buckner. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing just terrific. Please call me Jerry, not the sir. It makes me feel too old.
My pleasure.
And this, I'm talking to Hex, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, I'm happy to be on the program.
So how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's quite the honor to talk to you, actually.
Oh, well, I appreciate you saying that, but I'm happy to talk to you. Glad you would call me.
The four songs I was planning on playing were Pac-Man Fever, Wreck-It Ralph, E.T. I Love You, and Froggy's Lament.
Oh, all great selections. You know, Froggy's Lament was actually the song we wanted to be the second single.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where we wanted and the management wanted, but CBS Records said, no, we think Donkey Kong would be a better single. And it was a good, you know, little pop song, good commercial little song, but it just didn't quite click. But I think the Frogger thing would have been a cool selection too. But that was the choice we had.
Yeah, I really love the vocals on it. It's really fun, and it's just an overall really fun track. I mean, I enjoyed the Donkey Kong track, but I chose Froggy's Lament for a reason.
Well, I appreciate that, and as I say, a lot of folks like it, and I mean, that's just, you know, when we recorded the album, our goal was to try to come up. I mean, we would go out each night. Let me back up a little bit. After Pac-Man began to take off, then the label wanted us to do an album, and we kind of wanted to mix, you know, a variety of songs, game songs and regular songs, but they preferred it be all game songs. So we would go out at night, and by the way, they wanted it like yesterday, so we had to hurry. So we'd go out at night to a different game room or bar or wherever, and find a new game at the time, because, you know, as you know, or don't know, this was exploding and happening kind of, you know, one game at a time type thing back in the early 80s. And so we would find a game and somebody that could play it, that knew how to play it, and watch it and take notes and listen to it. And then we would go home and work on the song overnight, work on the song the next day, and then get into the studio and start producing it and working on it. And our goal was to try to come up with each song, you know, try to come up with a good pop sounding song. Don't just throw something together and throw the sound effects in there and, you know, make some just, you know, passable thing to throw on an album. We really wanted to try to do each song as a good pop tune if we could. And I think we did. I think most people would agree that we did on that, hopefully. And that was kind of our goal. So, we kind of, the only problem we ran into was we had recorded two songs, regular songs to put on the album. And then when they told us that, they weren't going to do that, we converted those songs into game songs, but I think they still come out pretty good.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
Yeah. The song, my mind just went blank. The Mousetrap song.
Okay.
And Gone Berserk were both two other songs originally. And I'm not supposed to tell anybody that because they don't want us destroying them, but they really were actually, two other songs, but it worked out okay.
I like the narrative that some of the songs tell, like especially Centipede. Like I think that the narrative of that of hunting down the centipede is definitely it's a unique take on it, and I really enjoy it.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, we the album came about, the 30th anniversary was really kind of a twofold thing. It was the anniversary, but as you know, Gary had passed away a little over a year ago. And I just kind of wanted to, and we get a lot of questions people have asked us about the album and a lot of things on the internet that just weren't true. And I thought, you know, I'll take this occasion to maybe put together an album. And I was hoping maybe a few folks would find it interesting, and a lot of people like it. And we've had a lot of purchases and compliments. So I'm happy for that and appreciate it. And glad you like it.
Excellent. Yeah. One thing I thought was interesting, was when you released, Now and Then back in 1999, uh-huh. From my research, it says that it was released exclusively through mp3.com
at that time. Yeah.
that's
what was going on at the time. Yeah.
Yeah, no, but nonetheless, like still that was a time where CDs were still incredibly popular. And it's just to me where kind of like independent music is going right now, where it's focusing on releasing stuff primarily online, especially through websites like Bandcamp. It just seems so so bold, so pioneer like to do that back in 99.
Well, I give some credit to Mike Stewart. Mike is a dear close friend for years. Mike played Moog on the album, original album, and on the reissue album. And we've had a continual relationship, both business and personal, with Mike and with Danny, his former partner. But Mike had an incredible interest in the internet and all that early on. I mean, back when it was years and years ago, and when it started to develop, he really got into it. So he understood and the you know, where things were headed early on. And in fact, it was his idea to redo the album. We really weren't that wild about doing it because it was a lot of work, and you know, we had to pay for it ourselves and do it ourselves.
Right.
And you know, we just, and Gary especially said, "No, you mean I got to go sing all this stuff again?" And I said, "Well, Mike seems to think it, you know." And I know this sounds, by today's standards, sounds so ridiculous, but this is 1997 or so, you know, and the idea of doing all this and then putting it on the internet and all that, you know, it just seemed, I don't know, but Mike convinced us to do it. And so that's what we did. And that's probably why the MP3, all that stuff came along, because, you know, he was pretty, and still is, Mike's, he does most of his work, he does a lot of online stuff and consulting work, and is very, very hip to what's going on. And that's probably why it all happened. I have to give him credit.
Yeah, no, and it's to me, it definitely seemed like the an incredibly, like I said, bold move, and I personally applaud you guys for doing that.
And let me say too, to follow up on what you just said, and any other reason, and this was probably, you know, just as high a reason. People were requesting, as you know, in talking about CDs, everything went to CD. You know, all the albums on album stuff was transferred to CD at the time, and CBS didn't do that with ours because of all the licensing nightmares that would go with all the songs. But we personally retained the rights, so that's why we, in response to the public wanting CD copies and everything, we thought we should do that, along with the fact of what Mike was saying, that was where things were headed. So, but I just wanted to make that statement.
But there was definitely a funniness in the pop music that you're doing before Pac-Man Fever.
Well, yeah, I mean, Gary and I grew up together as friends, went to school together from junior high school on, and played in bands and everything. And when we got out of school, we pursued a career in music and had a little studio and was doing all that and going to New York and trying to push songs and doing all the things you do, you know, as when you're young, trying to get in the business. And it's really tough, you know, as it's always been, and you get a little discouraged. And so one day I said, hey, you know what? We can't get these guys to do anything with our songs. Why don't we just put some song together with a guy, just put a beat to it, and a guy screaming, you know, that I got a beat, and take that to them, see if they buy that. It was kind of a joke idea, and it wasn't really meant to be a novelty record or anything. It was just kind of like, you know, just a way of release, you know, of frustrations. So we went in and did it kind of as a joke. Well, people heard it, you know, like, played it for a couple radio guys in Akron, and they go, oh, that's pretty crazy. I think I'm going to play that. And so they did, you know, and we got some response from it. Although one radio station, the guy actually, he didn't like it, and we got in an argument with him about it, and he got mad and threw us out and broke the record and threw it at us and all that. I think I don't know if I said that in the anniversary CD, but anyway, so that record was called Gotta Hear the Beat, Animal Jack. It was kind of somewhere between They're Coming to Take Me Away and Surfing Bird, I guess. and so it was real crazy, and of course would be considered a novelty record, you know. And three different labels over the course of years have purchased that back then because they thought it could be a hit. One label would purchase it and work with it, nothing happened, and then we'd get it back, and then somebody else would buy it. And it was just one of those kind of crazy records. So yeah, that kind of happened. And then we did some, what I would say, kind of unique records. We did a song, Footprints in the Sand, which had to do with the popular story that had been around back in the early 80s about the poem that was out. And then we also did a song on called Merry Christmas in the NFL. Now, that was a novelty record, meant to be a novelty record. It was just an idea I had, and so we went ahead and did it. And there was a DJ here in town named Willis Agard. And Willis, we enlisted him to do it. He did a good job on it, and we sold it to a national company. But it didn't, you know. I mean, it got play and got in the top 100, but it was not really a hit. But that was a novel, you know. I mean, that's what it was. It was a novelty song. But so we weren't really trying to, you know, get in the novelty record business. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but I mean, Gary and I have been players for years. And played in bands and stuff through school and loved blues and jazz and heavy metal. I mean, we played everything and loved it in different bands. So, you know, it's not like we were just, that's all we cared about or did. I mean, we did a lot of different kinds of music, but when Pac-Man hit the game,
yeah,
and we were working on stuff in the studio, like everybody else, we got hooked on the game playing it. And then I thought, well, I wonder if we could do a song about it. And that's kind of where it all happened, started.
And you just accidentally stumbled across basically making video game music?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we did the song, and then when it took off and CBS bought it and it took off nationally, then we did the album and everything. I mean, we had hoped to, we knew that if we did an album of just game songs, it probably would pigeonhole us.
Right.
And we, so we didn't really want to do that. Not that we thought that there was anything wrong with doing those, but it's just in the entertainment business, you know, you get labeled with things.
Right.
And that's kind of what happened. And so in fact, we tried to, convince CBS Records to do a second album of regular songs, and they just didn't want to do it. And so, we negotiated a release from the contract, and then we were going to produce some other groups and some stuff. And, but that's kind of what happened. So, you know, you kind of get, I mean, hey, we're okay with it. I mean, I'm proud of the album. I think it's a good pop album. It's good music. It's pop music. I mean, if you don't like pop music, then I guess you won't like it, but I think it's a fun album. It's a good album. We're proud of it. People liked it. And, we don't claim it to be anything more than what it is, you know?
No, and it's an amazing album. It still has standing power today. Just casually listening to it, it still holds up, in my opinion.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. And you're right. I mean, kids, you know, or anybody, but especially kids, you can play this album for a, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old kid, and they love it, and they want it. And,
oh, yeah.
And they think it's great. And, you know, the musicians that played on it were top Atlanta musicians. I mean, Ricky Hinkle played guitar. He played with a lot of different artists around the country. Jenny Whitaker, who played drums. Jenny worked with Country Joe and the Fish. She worked with, gosh, I can't think of all the names, but just some great musicians. And everybody on the album were really top-notch musicians. So, I mean, I have to admit, sometimes it gets a little under your skin when somebody wants to, you know, talk about and say the music's horrible or the people were horrible that played it. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. These are all top-notch musicians. It's a style of music you may not like, and if you don't like it, great. But you don't say these people aren't good, because they're good.
Definitely. And so recently, for the movie Wreck-It Ralph, a new song by you came up on the credits, and I was kind of blown away when I heard it.
Well, it was the idea of Tom McDougal at Disney. Tom's head of our music there. And they called us last summer, and they had this song that was already written. And they had thought about having, is it John O'Reilly, I guess, in who's the lead in the movie, but he didn't really want to do it. And then they thought, well, you know what, maybe if those guys would like to do it. So they called us, and we said, we'd love to do it. And went in the studio, and they worked with an associate producer out of L.A., Jamie Houston, a really great guy who's had a lot of hits and done a lot of Disney stuff, hits with a lot of the acts there. But we produced it together. And the idea was to get a song that sounded like something we would have done back in the 80s.
Right.
But with a little bit of a contemporary sound to it, you know, kind of bridge the gap there. And I think we succeeded in doing it. And people seem to love it. They love the song. I mean, it's had great response, and we've had a lot of fan mail and email, and people just seem to love it. Matter of fact, today the CD had been on the charts in iTunes for a while and then dropped off, and it's back on again.
Oh, cool.
So it's in the top 100 in iTunes. We're pretty thrilled about that. So the people seem to really love the song. I was just so happy and pleased that it was, I didn't know how people would receive, but the fans love it, the kids love it, and it's kind of opened a lot of doors for us.
It just really reinvigorated my it felt like a perfect connection with the movie itself, like this hearkening to back in the day while still celebrating it.
Yeah, I think too. I mean, and this is just my own personal opinion. I wasn't told this, but I think that that had we got in on this a little early, had this idea come to pass sooner. They definitely, I think, would have put it probably in maybe the beginning of the film or at least at the end credits. It's just that being the film was completely completed when we finished the song, we had to rush to finish it because, as you know, the movie came out in October.
Right.
And we were working on this song in July and August.
Oh, my gosh.
So, you know, they barely, you know, to get it in the movie. So I think that's one reason why they had nowhere else they could put it, but at the end without going in and doing a bunch of editing. But Disney loved the song, and I think the fact that it was number two on the soundtrack CD shows you they really liked it, and people seemed to really enjoy it. It was, I got to tell you, it was such a thrill. We went to the theater here, a bunch of us together that had worked on the project, and to sit in the theater and see your name in the credits on a Disney movie and then hear the song, it was just amazing, just incredible, just a great, a lot of fun, great day.
Oh man, I can't even imagine that. Ah, that would have been so amazing. Yeah, because I grew up a Disney kid myself, and so I went to go see that movie the moment I could, because I'm also a total video game nerd. So Disney video game, and I'm so happy with how it came out.
A lot of people have said to us that when they heard the song, they didn't know anything about us being having a song in there, and when they heard it, a lot of them thought, "Boy, it sounds like a song those guys would have done." So I think it was great that. That worked out, but you know, it got an Annie Award, the soundtrack. So we're all proud of that, because Disney takes the Annie Awards very, very serious.
Oh, wow.
They consider that the Oscars of the animated world, you know.
Yeah.
And the movie swept, I think, like 5 Annies, which was amazing, because you know, Pixar is always really big, and Brave, you know, they thought Brave was going to be the. But I mean, I really think nothing against Brave and all those folks. I know they did a great job, but Wreck-It Ralph, everybody thought that would win the Oscar. It really should have. It was innovative. It was a great movie, great story. It's a shame, but hey, you can't win them all, right?
Right. So do you have any projects that are going on right now?
Actually, we do, that we're really excited about. We have a project we've been working on for really about a year and a half. It's a mobile video game that is called Buckner and Garcia's Cafeteria Food Riot.
Oh my gosh.
And it's just a fun game that we had an idea for. It's a mobile game, kind of like a, you know, Angry Birds type game or whatever, where you can you throw food and stuff at various targets and people and score points and everything. And it's just a lot of fun. And we're just about to, days or no more than maybe hopefully a couple 3 weeks to releasing it. And we're going to give, you know, I think the first 4 or 5 levels away for free.
Oh, wow.
But it's, you know, it's not a complicated game, but it's just fun. You know, you get a lot of sound effects and tear stuff up and throw stuff. And that's going to be coming out and will be, you know, put up on iTunes and try to do some promotion on that. And I'll let you know. In fact, when it does come out, I'll send you a link. I'd love for you to go play it and see what you think of it.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to.
But we just thought it'd be a fun thing to do and doing that. And then we're hopeful to work on a sequel. The Disney sequel. I hope we'll get a chance to work and put music in that on the Wreck-It Ralph. So we're in the studio working on new material, mobile game coming out. Also, I tell you something kind of odd that that came up. We have, you know, Google alerts on everything so we can keep track of our songs and what's going on.
Right.
And there's a show called Supernatural. You know the show?
Yeah, I love Supernatural.
Okay. And my youngest kid loves Supernatural and watches it. And it turns out, I get a Google alert, it turns out that they have a Supernatural episode coming up sometime in April, I think, and it's entitled Pac-Man Fever. And I cannot imagine what that's going to be.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I got to watch it, you know, and see what it's about.
But definitely.
Yeah, it's called Pac-Man Fever on Supernatural. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
I mean, what do you think it is? Maybe a demon comes out of a game machine or something? I don't know.
Something like that, or sucks them in, or something like that.
I can't wait to see what the storyline is. Because usually those shows, whatever the title is, it usually, you know, has some relative to it in some way.
Right. Yeah, and they try as hard as they can to usually put a rock song as the theme, so as the title of the episode. So that's really cool that that Pac-Man Fever made it as the title.
I guess we'll see. You know, and we've had a lot of different things. We've been in the Rose Bowl parade, the song, and it's been in fact, one of the more unique things, I think, was when it was a long distance dedication on Casey Kasem's show, which was pretty wild.
Oh, wow.
We've been in the New York Times crossword puzzle. We've been on the answer on Jeopardy, you know, it's just a lot of crazy stuff, but never been on a Supernatural show. So we'll see what that is.
Well, sweet. Well, thank you so much. Taking us out of this episode, out of this interview, we're going to have Wreck-It Ralph, followed by Froggy's Lament. So, Jerry, thank you so much for sticking around with me.
Thank you for having me on the program. I enjoyed talking to you, and anytime.
Thank you so much.
He's a giant of a man, 9 feet tall with really big hands, living in a stump on his very own land until his world went crazy. showed a piece of paper saying eminent domain. They built an apartment building saying progress was to blame. So he got mad and he turned bad. Brick by brick, he's gonna take his land back. Wreck it, wreck it, Brown, as fast as you can. You know you can do it with your colossal hands. So pull it, fix it, Felix, and that building stand. Is a really great guy. Watch him get all turbocharged when he hits a pie. Not just a superintendent, he's a super, super guy. And everybody loves him. With his trusty tool belt and steel-toed shoes, nice hunters believe that Felix just can't lose. So when Wreck-It Ralph starts to come unglued, he doesn't get mad, cause he's so rad. Fast as you can, use the magic hammer you got from your old man. Cause you know Wreck-It Ralph won't let that building stand. I wreck it, I wreck it, I fix it, I fix it, I wreck it, I wreck it, I fix it, I fix it. Every level tension's getting stronger. So be careful. Fast as you can, you know you can do it with your colossal hands. So don't let fix it, Felix, and that building stand. I wreck it, I fix it, I'll fix it. Fix it, Felix, as fast as you can. Use the magic hammer you got from your old man. But you know Wreck-It Ralph won't let that building stand. I wreck it, I fix it, I'll fix it.
Has no reason or rhyme. He hops and jumps, dodges and ducks, cars and buses, vans and trucks.
Go, Froggy, go!
You gotta keep on hopping till you get to the top.
Go, Froggy, go!
Gotta keep on hopping, you can never stop. Go, go, Froggy, go! Hiya, kids! Froggy takes one step at a time. The way that he moves has no reason or rhyme. There's snakes and insects, otters and things. At times I wish Froggy had wings.
Go, Froggy, go!
You gotta keep on hopping till you get to the top.
Go, Froggy, go!
Gotta keep on hopping, you can never stop. Go, go, Froggy, go! He takes one step at a time. The way that he moves has no reason or rhyme. The diving turtles have fooled him again. I guess for old Froggy it's sink or swim.
Go, Froggy, go!
You gotta keep on hopping till you get to the top.
Go, Froggy, go!
Gotta keep on hopping, you can never stop. Go, go, Froggy, go! Froggy takes one step at a time. The way that he moves has no reason or rhyme. He rides on the logs all the way to the top and into his cage with one final hop.
Go, Froggy, go!
You gotta keep on hopping till you get to the top.
Go, Froggy, go!
Gotta keep on hopping, you could never stop. Go, go, Froggy, go! Magic twanger, Froggy.
Go,
So what you just listened to was Chromalodeon Triangular from their final recording done in 2007. Now, Chromalodeon is a very, very unique beast when it comes to in the video game music scene. While they did covers of video game music, they also did stuff like the entire final recording album, which is just... It's a celebration of the sound of video game music rather than the exact melodies. And so this is a, to me, the final recordings is just is this, it is a fictional, it's a soundtrack to a fictional Super Nintendo game, with Triangular just being this, their opus, in my opinion. It's just such a beautiful and amazing song that I just cannot get enough of. And so the final recordings, Chromalodeon, they were together, and 2007 was their last recording, and they have gone their own way since then, and it's made me very, very sad. Well, that's all I have, really, except I have one more song, and I would be yelled at by the other music podcaster of the Nerdy Show Network if I did not include the following song in this celebration of nerd music that you may not be thinking about, the roots of nerd music. We have, and I know I said I wasn't going to be playing mainstream stuff that you know of, like I didn't play Styx, Mr. Roboto, but I am going to be playing Pinball Wizard by The Who from their 1969 album Tommy, because as Mark with a C says, this is the origin of nerd rock, and I can't really argue. I mean, I have some music from before that, particularly Tom Lehrer, but Tom Lehrer is also, he was doing comedy music and it wasn't anything new. But the very, I'd argue with Mark, I'd agree with Mark that the first video game song is Pinball Wizard. So thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did it recording it. And I hope you have an amazing day. Thanks for listening to The Hex Grid. The Hex Grid is made possible by a comic shop, Nerdapalooza, and the generous support of listeners like you. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend, rating, and reviewing us on iTunes, or making contribution in our monthly support drive. Any size contribution gets you exclusive Nerdy Show audio and images and lets you participate in our monthly support drives. Just go to nerdyshow.com/support to chip in. For more episodes of The Hex Grid, as well as other fine programming, community forums, videos, articles, and more, head over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via the iTunes Store. And for the latest news, follow us on all your favorite social networks.